Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Robert, were you buying at all the possibility that Seth Rollins was going to take over the interview segment with Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania? And what percentage of the audience do you think was buying into that as a possibility?
I don't think it could have been very high. And I don't think I was alone in thinking that there was absolutely no chance. After building this thing up for a couple of weeks, after having Austin do his promo, you know, being awakened by Steve Austin, none of it really made sense. There'd be no incentive to have this match if that wasn't the case. You know, they do this often with a title match you're pretty sure is going to happen. But maybe there's that 5% doubt or 4% of doubt, whatever it is. I think there was 0% of doubt here. I think people might have been waiting on some other surprises, if anything. But as far as the Austin confrontation being in question, I don't think that they did a good job of setting up any jeopardy to that.
We got a good match with Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens. And so you know, that was nice. You know, it's weird. You know, they're playing this role as friends, and there was a thought, hey, maybe they'll wrestle each other at WrestleMania, and it turns out they wrestle each other, but it's just sort of a bit of a throwaway match on an episode of Monday Night Raw without much buildup. So, you know, it kind of spends that card that maybe they could have played at a later time. I think that would be sort of depends on fans not remembering or not caring if something happens on a whim. They can just, you know, make it seem important next time they do it. But it is a semi-significant card to play just to fill a main event spot on Raw, but they have 52 weeks of Raw to fill every year, and they've got to come up with stuff. And this sort of felt like, we got to come up with something. How about this? But it was a good match. They won 16 minutes, and Kevin Owens won. It gives Owens a little bit of extra credibility heading into the whatever you want to call it against Steve Austin on the KO show at WrestleMania. I thought they did a nice job making it feel like a big deal. And my ears went up when Kevin Owens phrased it as the main event of night two. Robert, I've been asked this. I said no, but I'm curious what your answer is. And did tonight's little comment by KO change things, or is that just a heel boasting? Could this be the final segment on night one of WrestleMania?
It wouldn't shock me. My instinct is no, that you would close out with a match. But this has been the focus of Raw for 2 weeks. Like, this has been the thread that has ran through Raw on back-to-back weeks, where they opened and closed with this storyline. So it's been the number one thing on this show, whereas the title unification bout has really been more so in SmackDown, even though the titles do go across both shows. So that it wouldn't stun me, no pun intended, just based off of how they've been building it. I wouldn't think, you know, even going into – you know, if you asked me 3 hours ago if there was a chance of that, I would think probably not. Like, it's WrestleMania. You're going to close it out with a match. It's very rare that they end any pay-per-views without a match. You know, you had, like, you know, the wedding, I think, that one time and those sort of things. So I still would be kind of surprised if they did, but not shocked at all.
I'm only a little bit swayed about the possibility because Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar is likely to close out night two. That feels more like a SmackDown match, even though technically it's a Raw versus SmackDown match. So, and I was thinking Charlotte and Ronda Rousey will be the last match on night one because it's Ronda Rousey. She's more of a special attraction, and that's sort of what WrestleMania builds around. But maybe they end with Becky against Bianca and give Raw that match. But maybe they want to give Raw the final segment, and it follows Rousey versus Charlotte. So it's just something to watch. I don't want to read too much into it beyond us spending a minute on it here. That jumped out. You mentioned no pun intended. Perfect lead-in. I don't know if you caught it, but at the end of Raw, Corey Graves struggled to get his syntax in order, and normally he doesn't. He's trying to figure out how to arrange the words so he could, I'm reading into this, but so that it would make sense, when he said all of Seth's hopes and dreams for a WrestleMania were, quote, dashed tonight. With all the rumors, logical connect the dot rumors, the biggest star who doesn't have a match at Mania, and everybody's talking about it, is Seth Rollins. Cody Rhodes is available He is not under AW contract, as far as anybody knows. That would be, you know, a very covert re-signing if that had occurred, although, you know, the parties involved are doing a good job being coy about this all. So I think that jumped out to me. It didn't feel like, I mean, the word makes sense in the context. If it was any other time, I wouldn't have even thought twice about why did he use the word dash. That's how that word is used. But I went back and replayed it, and he was trying to kind of get his words right so he could close with that. It sort of felt like it wasn't the natural flow, but I got to fit the word dashed in here. So anyway, I'm squirting a little lighter fluid on the rumor flames here that, you know, maybe this will give people who want to think that's around the corner a little more reason to think. Am I reading too much into it, or is that kind of intrigue you too?
I would say you're probably reading a little too much into it, but again, I wouldn't rule it out. I didn't catch it in general because I was kind of like the rest of the audience. I was looking around the corner to see if Cody was coming in or
right.
doing that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So my brain was a little locked in. And we have to go back to even earlier in the night with the Rollins segment earlier, but when you got the Cody chance, and these days we don't believe the chance.
You know,
we don't know what our pipe chance and what our legit chance. Clearly, you know, with the Miz of a couple of weeks ago, they were leaning into the rumors, and that seems to have, you know, they obviously went a different direction even that night. I'll give them some credit that they are creating more interest in Cody than I think would just be there organically by kind of doing this. And
that's funny. Yep.
That's a passive aggressive slight at Cody, I guess. But if they do that, I mean, if they're probably going to pay him a ton of money if they bring him in, they won't do much with him after about 2 months. But in the immediate, I think that would make sense to make people want to see him to, you know, kind of manufacture a pop however they get there.
I do not sense that the large mainstream WWE viewing audience is thinking about Cody Rhodes at all. And I know people who live on social media, on the internet, or listen to podcasts like this often, you know, think that the majority of people are that way. But even in politics, you know, whatever's going on Twitter does not necessarily reflect the voters who are going, you know, to vote. I mean, like you're in a bubble. And my sense is there's not a bunch of Cody chants. They didn't react to Miz. I think they piped in the Cody chance, but I don't know. We don't have an on-site correspondent who let us know ahead of time they're calling in. But if you are listening to us in your car, leaving the building, give us a call and push one on your keypad. We'd love to hear from you on that. Hopefully we'll find out one way or the other if the Cody chant was organic or piped in the background. The announcers aren't drawing attention to it. I would be surprised if that was an organic Cody chant. I'm not ruling it out. I'm just saying that would surprise me if fans would choose that moment to chant that at him. I mean, it's logical. I haven't sensed a real, like, groundswell of mainstream WWE fan who's just, like, on the edge of their seat waiting for Cody to show up, even though all of us are because we're on the internet, we're on social media, we're doing podcasts, and we're talking about it because we're kind of privy to that as a possibility. What's your take on that?
That's been my general take on Cody, and it kind of goes back to the thing I said earlier, right, where I don't think I think the general WWE audience probably views him the way that WWE viewed him in his first run. There's not really a reason to think that exists otherwise. And then even in the arenas, as we've talked about before, it seems like those the fans that would be, you know, the Torch fans for the most part are not necessarily the people that are in the arenas post COVID. So I think that creates a little bit of a barrier to that, the naturalness of that coming. With that said, yeah, like all over my timeline, all I hear about is Cody. Like I'm shocked by how much we hear about Cody, and it kind of makes sense. His departure from AEW, I think, was pretty shocking. Like that's something that caught a lot of us just sort of flat-footed to know that was a real possibility and a real thing that happened. So you understand why the interest would be there. It would seem like, well, if there's not something really big coming up on the other side, and then along with some of the reporting that's been out there that there was at least a degree of mutual interest, we all, you know, do our little sleuthing and we put that together. Now, I will say this, though, based on the crowd, is you think about the location where they're at tonight. If there was kind of a Cody City, I wonder if tonight would be a Cody town. I was actually shocked there wasn't more more healing on like the Jaguars and all that, but I do think the city might play a little bit of a part in if there was a Cody chant.
Yeah, well, I will say my reporting was not there was mutual interest on both sides. My reporting was definitively Cody's going to WWE, and I stand by that reporting. And that was very early on in the process. I fully expect Cody to show up. But as I said, until there's a press release or a press conference, an agreement in principle over the phone does not necessarily lead, does not preclude there being something that gets in the way. I have not heard of that credibly happening. And so I will be, quite surprised and want to learn the backstory if Cody does not land on WWE TV between now and the day after WrestleMania. And I, they might be saving it for then, but I just can't imagine somebody of Seth's talent level, Robert, like not being in a match at WrestleMania. And this idea that he'd have been happy doing a talk show just to be on WrestleMania, I mean, I don't know. It's weird that wrestlers are okay just hosting a talk show. I understand it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, but for Seth Rollins, you'd think, he'd want a match. So maybe they start going that direction with the storyline with Seth next week. They're certainly using that as a big story arc heading into WrestleMania. How does Seth get on to WrestleMania? And I don't think they'd put this much time into it if they didn't have something sort of big planned. And that's where I just continue to, I mean, they're not going to do Seth against Kevin Owens now. Like, they could have done that. That might have been the backup plan. Well, Kevin, you can interview Steve Austin on night one, but I want to wrestle you on night two. I just don't think this match looked like it was setting up a rematch. So what's big enough for Seth other than Cody when you look up and down that roster? We're down to like what, Elias is the second choice making his return. So, and no one knows where he is, by the way. So Miro just resigned for a couple years with AEW. We don't know where Elias is.
Right, and I think even going on that, you got to have him in a match, and of all the wrestlers, I think you have Seth Rollins around to have matches, that is his role. KO, even though very good in the ring, he's a guy you could see in a talking sort of segment. That fits his persona and what he's naturally good at better. Unless they're just going to keep him off and actually finally go full in with this storyline they run every year of, Cena has to be in the Elimination Chamber match because he can't get into WrestleMania. Maybe they're just going full in on it and actually going to keep one of their top guys off the show to sell that stiff, but that would be a hard-headed way to go about doing that.
I would like it just because, the stance I took with Todd Martin on The Fix last week, if they start leaving big names off WrestleMania, it'll add some credibility to this annual storyline, I won't be on WrestleMania. And it'll add a little more credibility to the announcers declaring, they have their road to WrestleMania, they punched their ticket to WrestleMania, and it won't feel so just sort of trite and kind of ridiculous, given how all the top stars generally are on WrestleMania. So, but Seth is healthy and it's two nights and WrestleMania should have Seth Rollins on it in a match. So I'm sure the match will be dashing. I'm not sure that pun will apply to Cody. I'm just saying Seth's match will be good. Let's pause and introduce ourselves and then get to some phone calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, March 14th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. And also the host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows and podcasts and a variety of VIP exclusive after shows like The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich Fan, the Wade Keller Hotline, including the Focus on WWE and Focus on AEW varieties, and the post pay-per-view roundtables, which I've been hosting since 2003, following all WWE and other pay-per-views over the decades. We're almost going on 20 years now of post pay-per-view roundtables. So go VIP to hear all that. pwtorch.com/govip. Our archives with almost every podcast we've done since 2003 available on demand, and we also add archive podcasts to our VIP podcast feed that works on popular podcast apps, including Apple Podcasts and Stitcher and more. So go VIP, pwtorch.com/govip. I am joined by Robert Vios, who is the host of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup, a different show every day of the week with a different theme covering NXT, ROH, MMA, as I just mentioned, and more. We also have, speaking of nostalgia, the PW Torch 90s past cast, the newest addition to the lineup, looking back at Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter from 30 years ago that week. So it's worth checking out. Just search PW Torch on your podcast app or visit our website for alerts and links to those shows, pwtorch.com. Robert, good to have you back. We have not been intentionally avoiding each other, but you've had some things going on Monday nights, and you've guest hosted with others, but not me. It's been like 4 months. It's good to have you back on a night that I'm hosting.
It is, Wade. You know, it's like the same pro wrestler. You gotta keep them apart. That way, whenever the money's there, people want to pay to see it. So.
Yeah, and you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. I won't say I was sick of you, but I was a little more excited. You know, having you as a co-host, having not talked to you for 4 months, that nothing against how often we were talking before. I'm just saying it did add excitement to the mix.
I'm going to use that same logic with my wife a little later on, so hopefully that works.
Perfect. All right. I want to pivot here to just acknowledge the death of Scott Hall, the bad guy, Razor Ramon. That WWE aired a really nice tribute video to him. Corey Graves was, crying as he threw to it. Scott Hall, a major star in this industry. I talked about this on the VIP Keller Hotline earlier this week, yesterday, in fact, talking about how Scott Hall was sort of, in my eyes, as an AWA fan in the mid-80s, a replacement for Hulk Hogan. Vern Gagne, the promoter of the AWA, tried to present him as a possible replacement for Hulk Hogan. Scott wasn't ready yet. But he had the size, and they really were pushing hard when he arrived because they thought he had a good look. They called him Magnum Scott Hall. Eventually, he dropped that nickname to become Big Scott Hall. Not the most inventive of nicknames, but what are you going to do? And he ended up teaming with Kurt Hennig in a really good tag team in the AWA in the mid-80s. And he'd move on to WCW as the Diamond Stud and then, of course, really elevated himself as the Razor Ramon character, building on the Diamond Stud traits and taking it to the next level. And he wasn't a top-tier main event star for WWE, but he was more along the lines of like an Undertaker-type character, where you're not for much of Taker's run. It was more a special attraction. Razor was kind of in a different category than even that, but closer to that than the world champion centerpiece. He was so colorful and distinct and really came into his own during that run. But then he took it to another level when he and Kevin Nash, who were best friends to the end, and I know Nash is really broken up about losing Scott Hall. You can see in his Instagram post how much Scott meant to him. Same thing with Sean Waltman. Hall and Nash, great friends in WWF, became even better friends in WCW when they arrived as the Outsiders. Such a hot act, Hulk Hogan agreed to turn heel just to get a rub from them, and of course Hogan also added his star power to elevate the Outsiders when he formed the larger faction called the NWO. Scott had a lot of personal problems with chemical dependency and abuse, and also just mental health issues, which he had been open about over the last, roughly 10, 15 years. I think he went in depth for the first time with me in a 6-hour-ish Torch Talk interview I did with him. I think he intended to talk to me for maybe an hour begrudgingly, and we did it in a couple sessions that went around 3 hours each, if I'm recalling all the logistics right. And he really opened up, really talked about his career. And it was then that I fully appreciated the reputation that he had for being one of the smarter people in the locker room. Not everybody loves Scott Hall. He wasn't always a joy to be around. He was the first to admit that. He wasn't out, shaking hands and smiling and being gregarious with people backstage. That wasn't his nature. But boy, was he smart. And he was loyal, and he called things as he saw them. He spoke truth to authority. He spoke truth sometimes to people who were beneath him on the roster if he didn't think they were very good. And that got him and the click heat in the WWF locker room and later in WCW. He was blunt and true to himself in that way, unapologetically so, by the way. And he, people might be mad at some of the things he said, but he was right a lot of the time, maybe most of the time, when it came to his opinions on wrestling. He was so sharp and saw things for what they were, and people were smart to listen to him behind the scenes. And that's, you know, different than how fans saw him, which was as this larger-than-life character. And I thought a real poignant quote from Kevin Nash in the video tonight is, you can't create coolness. You just are cool. And Scott Hall just was cool. And that is true. Yeah, the quote was, you can't teach somebody to be cool. Scott was always cool. So it's real sad. I reported over the weekend that Scott had hip replacement surgery, had a complication that led to a blood clot breaking loose, and then he subsequently had a few heart attacks and was on put on life support. I didn't report it at the time, but you know there was his family and friends were told there was no hope, you know, that he was going to come through, and it really was a matter of his family just going to see him in the hospital before taking him off life support. And when they did, he survived a few more hours before he died earlier today. And so our condolences go out to all his family, his friends. Many of them have been spoken publicly through social media about what he meant to them. And it's a sad day to lose someone. 63 is too young. I know Scott, you know, kind of talked about being on borrowed time anyway, but I don't think this was you know, something that he was anticipating when he went in for that surgery. Robert, anything you want to add to your thoughts on the life and career of Scott Hall?
Yeah, I mean, Scott Hall, I think for various generations of wrestling fans, he kind of means different things. As you mentioned, you know, followed him from the AWA and throughout his career. For my generation, he's kind of the guy that really started the Monday Night Wars, I think. He sort of for it to mean something in that way. And even in his you know, his colorful WWF stuff, I think like him and Bret Hart are the first wrestlers I was ever conscious of, like who they were. Like and I think because he stuck out so, you know, so iconic. Didn't even really realize what the character was a play on. And then I just really hope he really got, you talked about the borrowed time, got to enjoy this last decade or so, because I was thinking about it earlier today, like in that, it was 2011, 2012, felt like every weekend there was just a bad Scott Hall update. And something, you know, something was happening at an indie show, or they're running like the E60 on him. And it seemed like it was going to end then. Like that's just it. And we're coming off the 2000s with all the bad stuff that happened in wrestling, that we were dealing with. And it really did seem like he found some sort of peace or some sort of way to pull himself out of that time period. And for the last 10 years, he's just been kind of like the cool uncle in wrestling, which I think has been a cool role for him. And it's been interesting all night seeing the tributes coming in, not only from his friends and from people within the wrestling business, but people outside of wrestling, when you see them acknowledging Scott Hall. And it goes back to the other thing you said about, you know, he wasn't actually a main eventer. And I think it's interesting to think about that in our brains. He's a major figure in wrestling history. Even his time in WWF, where I think he had maybe one pay-per-view with Bret Hart in a main event capacity, but he didn't really need to be. And that's a cliche that gets thrown around with a lot of people, but it was kind of true for Scott Hall. Scott Hall himself, the Razor Ramon character, just you know, carried himself in such a way that he left an impact. He had that thing where you gravitated towards him, and I think he was a great wrestler. Obviously, he was a great talker, and then you talked about the mind. I spent a lot of time over the years just listening to, especially the last few years when he's been a bit more coherent about things. He did a couple podcasts with Austin. He's done some of the kayfabe commentaries and stuff he's done with you, and like you said, brilliant, insightful, and reflective too. You know, for everything that happened to him, he's not a guy that was necessarily blaming other people, even though there's others that could have shared the blame. But he was really one of a kind, and you know, wrestling world's not going to be the same. I think Raw tonight reflected that. Everybody, myself included, felt like we were paying attention, but we had our minds on something else.
Yeah, last time I saw him was at All In a few years back in Chicago. He was in a luxury box such as those exist at Sears Tower, or at Sears Center, I should say. You know, just was hanging out with his friends and watching a big time wrestling happening. And he was a fan and a student of the professional wrestling industry, and had a real instinct for steering people and things in the right direction. Also, like I said, I mean, we're all talking about the positives about him, but you know, part of the picture was he was complicated and he wasn't always warm towards people, and he was often dealing with lots of things going on with himself outside of the ring. And when you got a glimpse into him, as you say, you know, being coherent and speaking more openly in long form and giving his points of view, he was so artful artfully blunt in the way that he would express what he felt about what was going on in wrestling. And I don't think anybody should have ever discounted advice he gave, even if it felt like it was sharp. The criticism was too sharp sometimes. I think that ignoring him was a mistake. I think he understood this business, and you know, there's a reason that the people who I respect in wrestling, and their knowledge of wrestling and their being students of the game, always spoke so highly of Scott, even going back to the 90s. But in the ring, that's what fans are going to remember most. He was, as Kevin Nash said, cool. And I thought it was very nice that Kevin Owens started off Raw in the ring with a hey yo at the beginning of his promo. Didn't belabor, didn't draw a lot of attention to it, but I thought that was the right thing to do in acknowledgement of somebody of Scott's stature. I was hoping WWE would do a video feature on him and not just do the graphic at the beginning. You know, human life is valuable regardless of your star power, but when, you know, some people are going to get attention on Raw and other people aren't when they die. Scott is in that tier of people who deserved what he got tonight in terms of a video biography and that emotional introduction by Jimmy Smith and Byron Saxton, but especially Corey Graves. Robert, I want to invite people to call if they want to share, or email if they want to share any Scott Hall thoughts or stories on the show, in addition to talking about Raw and the latest WrestleMania developments. We are live streaming here on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. You can find our show at wadekellerpostshow.com, and you can find links to the actual live stream on our Twitter feed at PW Torch near the end of Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And also a link on my TV reports at pwtorch.com at the top and bottom. There's a reminder of the email, the phone number, and a link to live stream the show. We go live about 5 minutes after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every week, so you can call us or stream us online while you're doing whatever it is you're doing after Raw otherwise, and listen in, and you are invited to join us. Our phone number is 347, our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that will flag you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be brought on the show to contribute. We love to hear from new voices, and if you've got Scott Hall memories, this is a good time to make your debut if you're listening to us. You can also email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, so a lot more happened on Raw than we've talked about so far, and I'd like to get to that. Mark, we were about to go to you. Oh, you undid it and then did it. Okay, good. Hey, Mark from Pittsburgh, good to hear from you. What'd you think of Raw tonight?
Hey, what's up, Wayne?
Go ahead, Mark. Not too much. How you doing?
Oh, that was a nice tribute that you guys both did to Scott Hall tonight. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Whenever I watched Raw tonight, this is the first time I've called in a long time, and I didn't think that Raw was very good tonight, but it was kind of different. Seeing that Scott Hall died, so I appreciated the tribute you guys gave to him tonight, because that's what brought me back into wrestling several years ago, was whenever the NWO formed, you know?
Yeah, Scott, I mean, there's some wrestlers that cause you to watch television, but there's other wrestlers, or, you know, watch television wrestling, but there's other wrestlers who you sort of want to be, or you want to imitate, or you look up to because of their charisma. And Scott was one of those people. He wasn't just an exciting match. There was something different about him, and he really did connect with fans in special ways, especially during that Monday Nitro era, but even prior to that with Razor Ramon. You know, I had friends who they imitated him, and they wanted, you know, they looked up to him and wanted to be as cool as he was. And, you know, that's going to survive. He made a mark.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. And especially because whenever I watched WWF in 1995, 1996, it was really bad. And WCW became what it became in 1996 and 1997 because of the NWO. So we all have to pay homage to that. And what Kevin Nash and Scott Hall did, and Terry Bollea, a.k.a. Hulk Hogan, did. So I just really appreciate Scott Hall tonight. And I think we all need to sit back and appreciate what he really meant to the business, especially whenever you think about he came up with the Sting gimmick, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark, is there anything you want to say beyond about Raw tonight? You didn't think it was a great episode. Is there anything that you did like or anything that you want to comment on as far as that goes?
Oh, no. I don't think anything is really appreciative of Raw. I mean, tonight was the first time I watched Raw in a long time, and I only watched it just to see if they paid homage to Scott Hall, to be honest with you. I'm more of an AEW fan, but I was glad that they paid homage to Scott Hall tonight, and I don't know, man. You can take it from here.
Yeah.
Wade, I mean, you...
All right.
Take it from here.
Yep, appreciate it. Good to hear from you again. All right, we will move on here to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, welcome. Good to hear from you. What did you think about tonight? What stood out?
So I can't relate to Scott Hall at all. I didn't grow up watching him, so I can't really say anything about him. So I'll stick to Raw himself of what I saw.
No problem.
Yeah, okay. So I'll for Becky coming back and attacking Bianca the way that she did, I view that as is what Becky said on Twitter, karma. And so now I don't know what happened in the live event, and she just said that she got attacked from Bianca with her neck. I don't know how it happened. I didn't see no video from it, so I don't know. I can only take her word for it. But it was just a good moment that I saw. So my thing is just that I'm watching this feud here with Bianca and Becky, and I keep comparing it to Charlotte and Ronda. Maybe I should stop doing that. But it's like I'm thinking to myself, this really should be the main event, but it probably won't because they like to have Ronda and Charlotte, which whatever. But I'm watching this, so I'm thinking to myself, as a storyline perspective, it's so weak as a storyline because it really goes back to SummerSlam. And really, since then, they've been just going back and forth to saying, Bianca saying that, really, Becky said that, I beat you for 26 seconds at SummerSlam, so this is mine. And Bianca says that that's all you keep talking about is what happened at SummerSlam. Even Bianca's matching it. If the wrestler's matching it themselves on TV, then where are they going? It's so beyond weak to me in terms of a storyline perspective. And even if Bianca wins, then it feels like to me, then it's like, then what? It feels like maybe I'm looking ahead of this, but it's like, I don't know. It feels like so we people badly want this woman to become champion, but even what she does, are they going to turn on her like they did Becky Lynch at some point? Let's just say she becomes champion for the rest of this year and all that stuff. I'm looking way ahead here, but it's just, I don't know. I always keep hearing people say people badly want this woman to become champion. But what do you think about that entire segment in general?
Yeah, thanks, Dale. Robert, what's your take on the hype so far for Becky and Belair? Certainly, Becky probably being instructed to rest her vocal cords after the errant blow to her neck during a house show match by Belair. I wouldn't call it reckless or careless, but it doesn't happen a lot because people, you know, find a way to avoid doing that. But circumstances were such where there was an errant shot that caused some damage to her larynx. And so we haven't heard much from Becky. I was encouraged to hear her shout at the announcers, or shout down at Bianca, whatever it was, off mic, but you could hear her. So, but I assume she's being told not to talk much until it heals up. So that's changed things a little bit. But yeah, as Kyle led with, it's sort of comeuppance for Belair. It doesn't exactly frame. I mean, it frames Becky as a heel, but if you know what happened, it's sort of like, well, I mean, it's just Becky giving back what Belair gave to her. So anyway, what have you thought of the build so far and the little bit of a detour they seem to be taking because of the legit injury?
Right. I don't think the build has been necessarily bad in like what the decisions they've made, but it ran through my mind as I was watching Raw tonight that there's just no gravitas to this match. Like it doesn't feel like it's a WrestleMania match. And I've reluctantly been supportive of the match happening just because I think in storyline it does sort of make sense if you connect the dots, as the caller mentioned, from SummerSlam. Like that is possibly a logical progression. It'd be better. It's better, obviously, than Becky, than Bianca not getting the match at all. With that said, as I said, there just doesn't seem to be a lot of weight to it. I don't know what's missing from it. I don't know if it's a great promo. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just the miscasting of Becky Lynch as much as people like Bianca. I don't know what it is. And obviously they had to do the little turnaround tonight with what happened at the house show. It's been a rough few days for wrestlers in events for sure. I will note that WWE did do, you know, they're doing their fake injury angles now all the time, and they have something going with Bianca having a trauma to her throat. Okay,
yeah.
So that's where the karma tweet comes from, and then Becky just tweeting karma is a beautiful thing, isn't it? So yeah, like you said, it's already an uphill battle getting people to boo Becky, and I was thinking, I mean, I've had a problem with the hair thing, and they were referencing it tonight as well, and they tried to explain their way out of that as well, of, you know, well, she's messing with my hair. I've kind of had a problem with that all along just because it's a cool thing, but it's a heel-ish thing that I was hoping they would kind of go away from, you know, a year after the other WrestleMania win that she had. And obviously they got a lot out of the marks that it caused a couple of weeks ago. And maybe because this feud is kind of built on those sort of things. Like, I don't know what it is. That's my overall thesis on it. That there's not a lot of weight to this feud right now.
I like that that Bianca explained, you know, she doesn't use it as a weapon unless someone grabs onto it first, in so many words. And I think that's important because it does feel like she's bringing a weapon to the ring with her, that if she whips someone with it, they sell that as a huge advantage. So, I thought it was good that she just said, you know, she's not going to instigate using it. But if someone like Becky goes after it first, they will. I'm fine with the hype we've had for this so far. I think that it feels like a big deal because it ties into what happened all the way back at SummerSlam. I think they could headline night two with this. I think they have two more weeks to bring it home. We have to, you know, judge it with that asterisk of what would they be doing if Becky could still be talking. And so it is a little weird to see hype where Becky's strength is talking, and now she's just got to attack Belair and have her actions do her talking for her, which is not her, you know, usual approach. But going to what Kyle said, I don't think Belair is turning heel anytime on the horizon that I can see. I think, you know, they should keep her consistent. I don't want to see turns for the sake of turns. Don't become Edge, where you have a good idea for a promo or you think it'll be better for one feud, so your character just veers in this unusual direction that just seems to be incongruent with who you were just 2 weeks ago. I don't want to see her be part of that booking. I think that she can be a mega star for WWE, and they should have her be true to the – there should be a constitution she abides by, I think, literally for years before they consider turning her, and that should only be because the lay of the land changes in WWE, and there's a big money match and run in her as a heel. Robert, how do you feel about that? Do you think Belair is locked in for a while?
I think she should be for no other reason. I mean, there are other reasons, but the primary reason is the people genuinely do like her, and she's in a difficult spot now, being across from Becky. But she's not one of these ironic heels that gets cheered or anything like people are into her. There's a certain magnetism about her. People are attracted to her. And in general, like I've just said, between the two companies, there's just been too many heel turns like in the last couple of weeks. And we need a little bit of discipline in that. You need to make these turns count. And it was a little shaky with Bianca, I think, when she came on the main roster for that reason. And it's been an issue in the women's division as a whole. So I would like to see her just stay on the babyface track. I'd be a little less worried about the fans turning on her than I would some other people in that same position.
All right, Kyle, back to you. Anything you want to follow up on?
I like Bianca's a baby phase as well. I think Bianca's great. And like I said before, I'm a fan of both women, so I don't care who walks out as champion. But it just feels like to me, this is a storyline perspective at this point. It has been kind of repetitive and kind of a little bit boring at this point. I'm just like, can we just get to the match at this point? Because at this point, they're not really doing anything interesting to the within the feud. But I guess moving on, I would talk about Zelina, Liv Morgan match, really Carmella. Why does she keep on going to Corey Graves and try to distract Zelina, or maybe Zelina's just distracted herself to what exactly to just get herself to lose to Liv from this week or last week? I don't know where that's leading to. They're going to break up at WrestleMania when he loses the championships to Sasha and Naomi. I don't think Liv and Rhea are winning those belts, but is this going to lead to a breakup? What do you think that's leading to? Is this been 2 weeks now? It just seems so odd and random they decided to do this, have Carmella go to Corey Graves and just be with him without even get with no regard with Zelina Vega, treat her like she doesn't matter. What do you think about that? What do you think that's going?
Yeah, the idea that Carmella can't stay focused because she's so googly-eyed for Corey Graves as an angle to promote the reality show is irking Zelina Vega, and understandably so. Zelina's not super diplomatic in the way that she's dealing with it. I'm not sure who we're supposed to be sympathizing with, but it seems like they are leading towards a breakup. Where do you think they're going, and where do you think they should go if they do break them up, Robert, in terms of who fans should then start be directed to cheer in a feud between them?
That's a difficult question, because it's not like either one of them has been particularly likable. If anything, they've been, they've laid it on thick with both of these characters being extremely grating. I would think that maybe they would want to go with Carmella just because – this YouTube show is seemingly a very big priority for the company. It gets a lot of TV time for something that looks like it failed to get picked up by an actual network. So I would think that's where they want to go. And it's reality TV, so the person doesn't always have to be beloved to get attention. So maybe that might sway in the other direction. But I would think in general their eyes are on Carmella, as they have been for years and years, as someone who could potentially be a big star if she ever learned how to wrestle.
All right, very good, Kyle. Appreciate the call. Any quick closing words?
I think the last thing is about Seth Rollins. You know, I keep hearing everybody talk about Cody Rhodes when potentially coming in, but even if he does, people know him. I actually know him as Stardust and the Dashing Cody Rhodes stuff. I don't watch AEW, so that's all I know of him. So if he does come in, I'm curious how will the fans react to him, who isn't really an AEW fan. Now, maybe he'll get a big reaction, who knows, but if it involves someone like me who only knows him as the Dashing Cody Rhodes and Stardust, then it's like he's just another random, he's just a guy facing Seth Rollins who I feel like Rollins is the bigger star than Cody Rhodes in my eyes because I don't watch AEW. So that's my closing words of that, but they short call.
Thanks, Kyle. Yeah, no, I think about this, and I think some people have more certitude about how big of a star Cody will be received as than they ought to. I'm not ruling out that people won't pop, because I think there is at least peripheral knowledge that Cody was a co-founder of the movement that led to AEW, and he has the Rhodes legacy. He was part of the legacy with Randy Orton and Teddy Biasi Jr. There's a lot of history there with him, and Cody carries himself like a star. If he overdoes it, there's a grandioseness that is a turnoff, I think, for a babyface to how he presents himself or had been in AEW. And that was, you know, part of, I think, a variety of reasons that led to fans turning against him. But if he, even if you scale that back, he still comes across as a star. He knows how to carry himself that way. He did from the second that he was standing at a podium introducing his dad for a Hall of Fame induction. I mean, he has a presence and a star power and an it factor. I got a kick out of Stardust. He's like Danhausen, like in terms of his like weird kind of offbeat demeanor and sort of in on the joke, but, or is he just that weird? And I like his kind of dry sense of humor and deadpan delivery during the reality show with Brandy. There's a lot about Cody that WWE, if Vince McMahon and company can figure it out, can turn him into an even bigger star than he was in AEW. But it can also go the other way. And that's what makes Cody coming to WWE such an intriguing proposition, is it could break either way or somewhere in a sort of a boring way down the middle, where he's a little bit bigger star than he was last time, but he's just another player. Robert, your thoughts on what Kyle said? You know, there's a lot of WWE fans who remember Cody as Stardust, as a mid-carder, and don't even know why he was a big deal and might even push back against it. But then there's part of me that just thinks there's going to be a big part of the fan base who are the ticket-buying fans who are going to pop for him showing up because it's the first big acquisition. It's an EVP from AEW, and they're going to cheer the idea that they, as a WWE loyalist, got somebody back from AEW. So your take on that dynamic.
Well, it's kind of weird because, like, I didn't know those fans really existed until AEW came to be a thing. And what I mean by those fans is, like, the super WWE. I knew that obviously there's WWE fans and there's fans that don't follow it in the same way that you and I do and all that. But I didn't know there was, like, the actual loyalists. And I've underrated that being a thing. And maybe they just have an outside microphone online. So I wouldn't discount the fact that those people can sort of lead the charge and you know, look at this as that level, as that coup kind of thing. I lean to be more concerned about the audience just defaulting to the guy that was the knockoff Goldust gimmick. And as you mentioned, and I think this has to be said, for as critical as I can be of Cody, also is whatever Cody does, generally he throws himself into it, you know, full heartedly. And I think we saw in AEW, maybe sometimes there's a limit to that, because sometimes you throw yourself into something when you need to pivot and it comes across a little weird. And that's why I mentioned earlier that I think they're doing a fairly good enough job of at least making sure that the fans in the know are really going to be in the know when it happens. That way, if they need that reaction to build something off of, they can do it. And I think we've seen there's also been a thing with WWE audiences that maybe not everybody's in on what's going on, but you're kind of following the cool kids. And whatever the cool kids are doing, you want to be a part of something that seems exciting. My one concern, though, about it is this is not the Cody Rhodes of, like, 2019 coming off the Goldust match. This is a completely different Cody. I thought a lot about this, a lot of similar analogies to Del Rio's return, and I think it was 2014 or 2015, whenever he had left the company and then came back. The difference, though, is Del Rio had become, you know, kind of a hot commodity outside of WWE. Cody did that as well. But there's also this, like, almost a year of gap between the pandemic happening and then his character completely cooling off, where the interest in him was a whole lot less. Whereas at the beginning of AEW, you could say, oh, wow, like, look at, they really missed the boat on him. You know, going in, you know, based on his last few weeks in AEW, last few months, you would probably have the opposite reaction. I will say this, though. Cody often surprised me. Like, the draw that Cody was on the indies absolutely shocked me. Like, I just did not think that audience that's supposed to be that discerning would be that into the Cody Rhodes that came off of WWE the way that they were. And it really altered in a lot of ways, I think, parts of the landscape of wrestling. So I think there's reason to be optimistic, but this could go bad really, really quick if they're not careful, or even if they are careful and it just could slip away from them with a rowdy, weary WrestleMania weekend crowd.
Is Seth Rollins, fans like singing Seth's song, and Cody might be seen as a returning hometown or WWE original who strayed, or they may see him as a traitor who tried to hurt WWE and now he came crawling back. If Seth and Cody wrestle in Dallas, what is the most likely crowd reaction, and how many options are there that feel the least bit realistic?
I think Cody would be fairly embraced by that crowd on balance. I think Texas is a good spot for the Rhodes. I mean, there's a little bit of history there as well, and they could sell it. And it, I don't know. It's hard to say with Seth. Like, does he still have? He doesn't still have what he had in 2019 and 2018. He doesn't. Like, that's long gone. With that said, he has a ton of equity with the general WWE fan. I would tend to think Cody would get the better of it, all things being equal, but there's probably a lot of variables that are going to be going into that weekend, so it's hard to make a complete declaration on that.
All right. Let's keep rolling through phone calls. If you want to join us, you still can. 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Give us a call. I don't know if WWE should be happy that we're talking a lot about Cody instead of everything that is, you know, rock solid for WrestleMania. But they can turn that into a positive if it's sort of a last second jolt to get people interested. As of last count, they had, you know, 5,000 or so tickets left for each of the nights. They want to be able to legit say they sold out those arenas, and Cody might help sell some tickets or give WrestleMania that feeling of being something special. So we'll see how that goes. All right, we'll go next to William in San Diego, California. William, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, guys, thank you for taking the call. Kind of have a lot of thoughts about the show, but I'm trying to not ramble too much, and I'm going to try to organize them into little questions. I guess the thing that's kind of at the center of it all, the thing that has been having a bit of a trickle-down booking effect, if you will, on the show is the fact that the show is obviously without a heavyweight champion, like a centerpiece main champion. It seems that Brock is basically all but a SmackDown wrestler now at the moment, just focusing on Reigns. I feel like you go to Raw every week, and there's not like this central feud that feels like super important, that like makes the show feel bigger or makes it feel like it's quote unquote, you know, WrestleMania season registered trademark. I don't know. How do you guys feel about the overall feel of the show, like in terms of importance, yeah, and that WrestleMania factor?
Yeah, there's a bit of quantity over, I don't say quality, I guess with celebrities you could say that. There are some niche celebrities. You know, there's people who know Johnny Knoxville, and there's a lot of people who don't. There's people who know Logan Paul. There's a lot of people who don't. There's a lot of people who know Pat McAfee outside of being SmackDown color commentator, and a lot of people who don't. But they are collectively trying to make WrestleMania feel more special. But they don't have that one defining celebrity or even that wrestler coming out of retirement who we haven't seen in an actual match. They're aiming for Steve Austin to be that this year's Edge or Brock Lesnar or Ronda Rousey, the wrestler who hasn't been around or has never been around, who's making having a big match at WrestleMania. So they are reliant on more of an ensemble once you get past Lesnar versus Reigns. And it says something about their depth that they felt they needed Lesnar against Reigns, title versus title, instead of splitting them up against two challengers. And, you know, the Biggie injury aside, and we certainly wish him well. That was scary watching that on Friday. And thanks to Kelly Wells, by the way, for hosting in my absence on Friday on the SmackDown Post Show last week. The options that appeared there a few months ago were diminished by the time we got to WrestleMania hype, even before Biggie's injury and even before Lashley's injury, because Biggie and Lashley look like two challengers who would absolutely be believable WrestleMania opponents to Brock and Reigns had they been protected. And then we go from there. I mean, the women's matches, I think, are the, I don't know, the obvious ones to go with, even if some people would rather see Sasha in there or, you know, I don't know what else would, you know, Bayley if she was ready and had made a comeback. But, I mean, you are looking at a WrestleMania with, like, the Usos against Shinsuke and Boogs, which feels kind of thrown together, and Zelina and Carmella defending tag titles in a match that's sort of thrown together, and Drew McIntyre against Happy Corbin, which isn't just thrown together, but they're making the most they can out of it, but it doesn't feel big. And even Rey and Dominik being the opponents of Miz and Paul Logan, or Logan Paul, it isn't it doesn't jump off the page as this really monumental WWE, it seems like, or WrestleMania. It seems like a lineup that, in a way, exposes that lack of strong mid-card. They have, you know, a handful of top singles wrestlers in the men's and women's division, but it is just a handful. And then there's a pretty big drop-off. I think, though, Robert, they're getting a lot out of it, out of what they have, but it doesn't excuse them for not having more heading into WrestleMania season. So that's a bit of my macro overview. How about you? How do you feel about the lineup and the utilization of the roster that they have?
Yeah, the lineup just doesn't feel it doesn't feel very fresh at all. Like, there's some version of almost everything we're going to see on this card that we've seen before. I mean, obviously it'd be Lesnar and Reigns, which is probably the match they've done the best job of building, but I mean, it's like the fifth WrestleMania that they've met at, and they have always collided, although there's a different hook this time and a little bit different dynamics. And I think it goes to my earlier point about how the Becky and Bianca stuff kind of felt, that it does feel like there's not a lot to this, and part of it may be the depth. I mean, honestly, the Austin Theory stuff is maybe the freshest thing on the show, actually, as far as something a little bit different, a little bit new, a little bit novel for WrestleMania. But that's also kind of a quasi-celebrity angle, so that's just sort of the run-of-the-mill WrestleMania stuff. And as you said, the celebrity involvements aren't really those earth-shattering celebrity involvements, even if they may bring eyeballs. I mean, I'm sure, an influencer, the level of Paul is, does have its benefits. Same thing with McAfee, because he serves a similar role within sports media. So you can see that there's definitely probably some benefit they get out of that, but there is not there's not that one thing that it feels like I have to watch WrestleMania to see what happens with this. Even the Austin thing, which is the biggest or the second biggest thing promotion wise that they're putting on this show,
Robert,
feels like such a
go ahead.
I would say it feels like such a foregone
conclusion. Oh, you just dropped off for a second, but now I hear it.
Okay. And I think the main point is, even the Austin thing just feels like such a foregone conclusion that even though that's the big hook, it's not something that they've made feel from the overall perspective of the show like you have to see this event. And the double nights does dilute it. I mean, there's no way around it. I'm pro it, obviously, if it keeps us out from having a 6 or 7 hour show, but it does dilute the overall oomph that the show could have, or even that the top match or two could have.
All right. Well, let's. I'm sorry. Let's go back to William for any follow up on that or a different topic.
Yeah, kind of related. I mentioned the trickle down effect that not having that world champion is kind of having on the wrestler show. And I think you see that in the main event. I think you guys already talked about it. I called in a couple of minutes late. But I don't know. I wasn't really into the whole inception of the whole match. You know, them putting the KO show on the line, I guess. It just felt kind of silly, you know. Like, the whole context of this is that KO was talking shit about Austin to like try to goad him into a match or opening one last kind of whoop ass, as he said, and was making it personal. And it just feels it's just kind of silly or stupid for them to be like, so we know Austin wants to go after you, KO, but if you lose, I guess Austin is going to be going after Seth Rollins, and he's going to be opening up a can of whoopas on him, even though Seth hasn't really said anything about Austin. Match was still fun. I enjoyed it, but I just wasn't a huge fan of it. It felt half-baked. It felt like they were just grasping for something. And that kind of brings me to the other topic. I know you guys already talked about Cody enough, but it just feels like if there was ever a time to debut him, it probably should have been tonight, like, because I keep mentioning, like, they need something, and I don't think, I think I agreed with you guys that I don't think Cody is like this huge, needle mover that's going to, like, bring a whole bunch of buzz that, and which is going to make everything feel super important on Raw all of a sudden. But they do need something. And, you know, we only have 2 weeks to go. So I guess my question is, you know, what do you guys think is the more likely scenario? Are we going to, is he going to pop up in one of the next two following Raw? Are they going to wait until, like, WrestleMania? You know, maybe Seth Rollins goes out there angry, shows up in the middle of the ring, and Cody's music hits, and they have an impromptu match? Or do they stick to it and they have something at the Raw after Mania? Or, you know, maybe things did fill through as they are talking on other sources.
Yeah, there's benefits to any of the three scenarios. He shows up one of the next two Raws or SmackDowns. He shows up at WrestleMania as just an unadvertised surprise, adding to the WrestleMania brand and the buzz and the excitement, and perhaps the star power of Cody, that he can just walk on to WrestleMania and be part of it without, you know, having to earn a ticket to WrestleMania. Or do you reinforce the day after WrestleMania, the Raw after WrestleMania brand, by having that be Cody's debut? I see positives to all those scenarios, probably more so 1 and 3 than the second scenario, the first and third than the second. But I'm not sure that there's an obvious right way to go, and some of it just has to do with the story they're going to tell and how they want to tell it. If they have a really good story for an opening Cody promo and a good comeback from Seth, and they've got a good vision for what they want to do, go for it. If they have something else in mind for Seth and they want that Raw after Mania to, you know, mean something, to gain a little bit more, or kind of rev up the reputation that that's a big night to tune in, then saving him has some positives. Robert, where are you on that?
Yeah, I think if I could control everything, I'd probably pick the third option. I think that is the best one. I think Cody, that feels like, you know, night after WrestleMania worthy. Maybe not quite, you know, X-Pac in after WrestleMania 14, but it's those are the things that would be the night for that to happen, especially with as close as we're getting. If they wanted to build that into a big match, that's kind of a little late in the game. For that. The only thing that I'm hesitant about is kind of the what do you do with Seth, because they do need to find something for him to do at the show, unless he also starts feuding with Austin. Like, there's not a good place for Seth to go at this point. But as far as purely from a Cody perspective, I think that would be the way to do it, and especially because, as you're saying it, if I'm remembering correctly, that Raw after Mania hasn't been much in the last couple of years. It's gone on a bit of an ebb and flow, where it became almost like more. It became bigger than WrestleMania for a couple of years, especially in like the Uber Roman Reigns WrestleManias and what's going to happen. You know, like that era. Maybe starting all the way back at WrestleMania 29, 28 from there, until like the last couple of years, where I don't know if they've just tried to mute that crowd out, so they haven't been promising and delivering these things. But the shows have been kind of vanilla, if I recall, for the last 2 years, and they're going to be a little vanilla too, actually, with a two-night WrestleMania, just naturally that's going to happen. But with that said, I think that's probably the best place to bring in Cody. And it's not like Cody's one of these part-timers either. I mean, he may have a part-time contract, who knows. He was part-time at the end of his run in AEW, but I think Cody's a guy that's a little more can be presented as a big star than merge onto the oncoming traffic, as you like to say, Wade. And I think Raw after WrestleMania is a good spot to do that. Like, okay, this is a major player going forward. I mean, or, you know, the SmackDown after WrestleMania, whichever brand they do put him on. But, I mean, I assume it's going to be Raw, because it seems like that's where all the Cody teases are.
Yeah, yep. All right, very good. Anything else you want to add, William?
Yeah, I wanted to add my 2 cents on the whole Becky thing real quick, and then ask another quick question. I think I'm Kyle, that I think there's, like, I don't know, there's just something missing about that whole feud. And I do think that, you know, most likely Becky not being able to talk or even show up last week plays a big role in it. I mean, you know, she showed up tonight, but if Becky isn't out there, you know, doing a cool promo, hyping up the match, did she really show up? That's kind of how I felt about the whole thing tonight. So I know a lot of people call every week or email and mention how their pick for the main event would be Becky versus Bianca, but I just don't think that the story is there, and especially when you compare it to last week's SmackDown. I thought that that backstage brawl with Ronda and Charlotte really added something to the feud. It's not still quite there, main event level, but I do think that it's doing better than Becky and Bianca, and especially when you compare their reactions. I feel like people, you know, they clearly know how they feel about Ronda and Charlotte, and there's still some hesitance from some people to boo Becky, and I think that's one of the aspects that brings the Charlotte Ronda feud for me up a notch. Even if I am a bigger fan overall of Becky and Bianca than I am of Ronda and Charlotte. So yeah, I think you guys already talked a lot about it. I don't know if you guys want to add anything else, or I'll just ask another question. That's okay.
Robert, do you want to add anything to that? I'm good.
No, I think we kind of fleshed that out earlier.
Yeah, yep. So cool. Good to get your point of view, William. Go ahead with your next topic, though.
Yeah, awesome. So the last segment I wanted to bring up was the Edge segment. I like the new entrance. I like the music. I think that it's good that, you know, obviously it's a good idea that they've moved on from that song that, you know, if I were in the arena and I heard You Think You Know Me and that cool song, I'd probably pop for him, even if he was trying to be a heel. So obviously a good idea that they changed up and that they gave him a new intro. I don't know that that this week was any better in terms of fleshing out his character or convincing me that it was a good idea to turn him heel, or that they even did it, or that they did a good job at you know, pulling it off. How do you guys feel about the whole segment overall?
Yeah, Robert, you go first on that.
Yeah, I didn't feel much for it. I kind of forgot that it had happened, and I think that's saying something because it was a fairly uneventful Raw, obviously, with a lot of news hanging over it. I mean, like always with Edge, I think his execution was really good. I think this was the worst or the most lackluster of all three, but it's hard to just get past the fact that, like, why is he doing this? Like, why did he become evil all of a sudden? And Edge is, you know, a great, great heel in a lot of situations, but it's not really this character. And so I think he does a good job of it. I don't know why the blue has to stay on him the entire time. God, hope like he's not the Fiend or something, and his match is going to be in blue, because that would just be the worst. So yeah, I thought his delivery was good. I kind of just tuned out though whenever he was talking, because I feel like he didn't really have anything to say of substance.
Yeah, I thought this week was an attempt, maybe a little damage control. In terms of the lack of really satisfying explanation for why he took such a sharp turn from the guy that feels authentically Adam Copeland, which we saw in the feud with Miz. And this was more, you know, I mean, it felt was well delivered and well executed, but it felt like, you know, drama club. Edge wants to flex his acting chops and do something different. And it still just feels like a jarring turn from who he had been. It feels very disconnected from who people know Edge to be. I wasn't against a heel face matchup here. I wasn't against Edge being a heel, but I think there needed to be a week or two where fans saw it happen in front of their eyes. And I talked about this last week or the week before, where there's something that AJ said that Edge overreacted to, an insecurity that Edge has that we as viewers, it resonates as possibly something that is an insecurity, and that AJ doesn't have that, and AJ said something that was innocuous, but Edge overreacted and built upon that, and it snapped and triggered. It triggered something that led to him snapping into another mode and persona, and we just didn't have that. This didn't feel nuanced in that way. This feels heavy-handed, blue light, I'm intense, give me the close-up, show all the distinct features of Edge's face, and it's drama club, and I'm not a fan of that in the context that it's being presented. In a different context, it would work because Edge is very good at this. I just felt like they decided to flip a switch and go, it'll be more interesting for Edge Styles if Edge plays this version of Edge, and they should have taken their time and built a better on-ramp to who this is, or a better off-ramp to who we know him to be. And they just didn't do that. All right, Al William, any closing words from you or any reaction to that?
Yeah, I just want to talk about one last final segment real quick, and then I'll let you guys to control the callers or emailers. I think my favorite segment overall of the night was the tech team title scene. I think that's one of the, I guess, happy consequences of there not being like a world champion is that the tag titles feel kind of elevated. They felt elevated for the last couple of weeks, and I'm really digging the dynamic between Orton and Riddle for the first time in a while. I think that they just feel authentic, and that you know, kind of endearing bromance that they're kind of sharing right now feels authentic, like I mentioned. I thought that the Street Profits coming out and showing some seriousness and some edge was pretty good on their part. And I like that they seem to be including Alpha Academy into the match, because, yeah, it would have been kind of disappointing that after all the work and improving that they've done in terms of their characters and their in-ring, if they were... they had just been left out of WrestleMania after all the good work that they have put in. But yeah, that's all I had to say. So yeah, thank you guys for taking my call. Have a good one.
Great, thanks, William. Appreciate it. Good topics as always. I got a little nervous about how thick Randy Orton is laying on the friendship with Riddle. It makes me think they're, you know, it's pro wrestling. There's nothing genuine about an assertion of great friendship. It's usually setting up something to be knocked over. But I'm at a point where I almost think Randy is happy for the first time. He is happier than he's ever been. He has a friend. And the way he's talking, I almost, you know, I talked about how like Edge could overreact to something AJ said. I almost wonder if they're not setting up Riddle to overreact to a slight that Orton didn't intend or that most people would see as good-natured humor. And something occurs with Riddle that leads to him going heel. Because at this point, I don't even know if Randy Orton should ever be heel again. It's so nice seeing him in a good place after all the horrible things he's done over the decades. But it's being laid on so thick, I want to. The regular world me wants to think that's normal. Good friends stand by each other. And if you find the right person to be best friends with, it can just really change your life for the better. And that's what we're seeing. But Robert is pro wrestling, and I'm just can't help but be cynical or at least suspicious that they're laying it on so thick because there is an angle coming. I'm not seeing other clues right now of that, and that makes me happy. But I honestly, you could team Riddle and Orton for another year and not pull the trigger on an angle. There's like, just let them be champs for a year and let them have a long title reign and just build up opponents for them. Doesn't mean they can't have singles matches like we saw tonight, but just keep them together and ride it out and sell merch and let people tune in and be happy. Your take, Robert.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I'm generally against breaking up tag teams, kind of like what I said earlier with heel turns, just because it happens so often. And there's been almost zero sign of dissension. And there's more dissension with the father-son duo on this show than there is with these two guys. So.
Yeah.
There just really hasn't been that hint. The only hint is that Orton has been so nice and so protective, and the favor was kind of returned tonight with Riddle getting angry. But every time they do one of these segments, it just kind of feels like the Festival of Friendship every time. So you're seeing that, and you're like, and it's almost got to the point where it's distracting in the segments, to be honest with you, because every time Orton is slightly out of the frame, I'm waiting for the RKO to just come and break everyone's heart. That's what he's known for. So I'm seeing it. It's kind of like, it used to be the case with Michaels with the super kick too. I think there was a similar dynamic to that. And so I'm watching it with that. But I would love for them to stay together. I think it's added something to Randy's character, and it's the first time him being a babyface maybe in his whole career actually made sense, because every other time he was a babyface, it never felt right. You know, he always felt like such a natural heel. Kind of seems like he's probably a heel in real life, so to speak. That always fit a lot better. So like, I think like the early 2010s, he was like a babyface for like 3 years, and that's always when he's been the stalest, or when he's just sort of heel doing heel things, reading heel lines and without a lot into it. I think we're seeing a lot of range with him. And he's not, but he's still the Randy Orton character. Like I can still believe that this is the Randy Orton character. I think the scenario you laid out with Riddle being the one would make a lot would have a lot more intrigue if that's the direction they were going to go. As long as they don't telegraph it. I mean, yeah. Keep going the way you're going, and then maybe that kind of contradicts our earlier point about what they did with Edge. But I'm sure you can go back and justify, you know, you were patronizing to me, you did this or whatever, or, you know, I used you. I think there'd be a ways to explain out of it. But I mean, tag teams don't need to break up. Like that's not something that needs to happen. They can split up. They don't always need to stay together because they can go on different paths. But they don't necessarily need to break up. And right now. It's working, and we've talked about it before. It's Rock and Sock, Team Hell No, like those kind of odd couple tag teams. They have probably the least funniest version of any of those, but one that still works nonetheless.
Yeah, yep, for sure. I enjoyed the line. Where'd you get this popcorn, Randy, from this distinct independent shop that's located right here in Jacksonville that everybody knows about? It's the pride of the city. And Randy's like, no, I got it from the concession stand. I enjoyed that as fancy or as delighted as Randy is with his friendship with Riddle. He still can't, you know, isn't exactly going all out for his gifts. Well, move now to Ryan in Cumberland. Ryan, thanks for holding. What stood out on Raw for you tonight?
First question that I have is on Bianca Belair. Did Becky Lynch, I thought she said something about she was getting after Bianca's hair. I don't know if I misheard her, but I think it would be a good storyline if someone actually cut off her ponytail because that's one of the weapons she uses against her opponents. So you see that as being like a future storyline to get heat on the heel.
Boy, if WWE promoted a Belair Charlotte hair match and promised one of them was going to be shaved bald afterwards, that would draw a lot of curiosity. That would be a hair match for the ages. Charlotte's hair is a big part of her gimmick. I'm trying to think of someone else in the women's division where you wouldn't just know going in who was going to lose. Because, you know, I can imagine Bianca with a short haircut more than Charlotte in terms of, you know, just picking up the next week and going, all right, got to start over again. You know, in 6 years, I'll be back where I was. It sucks, but, you know, here I am. But I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to not put Bianca in a position to lose her hair, certainly not as part of an angle. If they did, it would have to be a stipulation in a match, and I would think the other person would lose, but and just because they were planning to take time off or something. Robert, what do you think about that?
Well, I think that's a heck of a trump card. Like, that's something to – like. There, I think there's value, right, and as long as it's applied in these, you know, match versus hair matches or less so than the title versus another stip because the titles change hands all the time. Hair is something, you know, that's a real thing. If someone really shaves their head, it's a real thing. I would think you would have to do it with one of the more diva-esque women, I think, than the really – like I think – even though the outcome might not be in doubt, if you did that with like Carmella,
yeah,
I think that's a pretty good hook.
Yeah,
more so than like, no disrespect, but when you did it with Molly Holly back in the day,
right?
Everyone knew who was getting their head shaved in that scenario. Now, and that, I saw that batter around on Twitter quite a bit actually. If they would ever do an angle like that where the heel does that, I think you would have to have more of a genuine heel than someone like a Becky Lynch do it. I wouldn't rule it out. That'd be a heck of a commitment from the performer, especially because that's such a part of the character and, you know, part of her life is having that hair. That would be a heck of a thing. I am in general though, as you know, on the women's side, I think the hair versus hair matches are a stipulation that can be explored a whole lot more. I'm saying that kind of half kidding, but also actually serious because there's just not a lot of stipulations in wrestling that mean a lot. And that's something that would, you know, that would matter.
All right. Back to you, Ryan, any follow-up on that hair match stipulation or any other topic that you want to bring up?
Question on MLS with him beating probably the biggest guy on the roster besides himself and the commander. Could you see like maybe a legend coming in like a Kane or someone else that's pretty big that he can go over or get the ship sailed on any legends coming in to feud with him.
And I'm sorry, who are you talking about, Ryan?
Omos, if he would possibly do a
Omos,
or some other giant
legends. Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was thinking, oh, you know, they've protected Commander Aziz sufficiently. They can just make that a match at WrestleMania, you know, give us a couple of weeks of hype, you know, talk about, oh, my God, what's going to happen? These two people looking eye to eye with someone for the first time in their life, what will happen? And everyone knows what's going to happen. Omos is getting a bigger push, but you can give fans a story to believe in, make it seem like it's a big deal that Omos would win and have it be a WrestleMania match. And in the process, you elevate Aziz a little bit, even in losing, because he gets a spot on Mania. It fills out the card a little bit. I just thought, maybe they'll do that. Now, Omos won pretty decisively, pretty quickly, and I don't know what's left for him other than winning an Honor the Giant Memorial Battle Royal if they do that. I don't have anyone that comes to mind, Robert, that could come in from the outside that is capable and worth being brought in to be Omos's opponent.
Yeah, there's not a lot of tall free agents in wrestling, I think, in general. Those guys get scooped up, and they get scooped up by the company that Omos is in. So I don't have anyone really off the top of my head, and I'm on the Wikipedia page right now for WrestleMania, just seeing, like, did they announce an Andre Battle Royal? Because that's generally the spot for the Giant at WrestleMania. Giant with lowercase g. That is where that character generally goes, whether it's been Strowman, whether it's been Big Show. To answer the overall question, I don't see a guy that can just step in and do the moment. You know, maybe it's a celebrity, another celebrity. I don't know if there are any tall celebrities that they could get. I don't know. Shaq might be tied up at this point.
I don't think you put Omos in there as a celebrity, because you need a worker in there or somebody who's, you know, competent enough to pull off the moves. And Aziz, I thought, did pretty good carrying the match, and that's really saying something when Aziz is one carrying it. But boy, it'd be dangerous, Robert, to put a non-wrestler in there with Omos. I mean, you'd really be limiting what they do.
Well, and that's why I think that would work even in the Battle Royal, though. Like, if you were to do something like that, where you really wouldn't have to do a lot. But again, just by saying that, we're kind of stretching things. I don't know. Maybe Veer can.
There you go. Veer shows up. Yeah, really. Veer shows up and says, "Omos, I got you." Ryan, anything else for us?
I'd like to give a Razor Ramon story. The first time I got to see him wrestle was when he first debuted against the Macho Man. He actually shocked me when I was a little kid, because he beat him by count out, because of seeing this newcomer come in and beating one of the top guys really surprised me, because I just looked at him as like a jobber. WCW is the diamond stud, and then here he is beating one of the top guys already. So I don't know if you saw any of those matches or not, but it was where Macho Man did the double axe handle and hurt his knee and then couldn't get back in the ring, and Razor picked up the count out victory.
Robert, do you have any memories of that?
That was a little before my time. I more think of Razor as the early Roz. It's kind of how I think of him. And I didn't watch him at the time, but just going back when the network was a thing, I know those '93 Roz is kind of where my early Razor memories are at.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing that, Ryan. Anything else you want to close with?
Yeah, it was actually a house shit. So I was just wondering, like, if you saw, like, in Minnesota, or they ran that, somewhere near you, or.
Yeah, no.
All right. Okay, yeah, thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, sure thing. Thanks, Ryan. All right, we'll go next to prepare yourself, everybody. Javier, welcome.
Hey, Robert, how's it going?
We're speaking.
Which board just brought you on, Javier? Go ahead. Yes. Yes, how you doing?
A sad day, man. Razor Ramon was one of the you know, I had watched wrestling before that, but I didn't become a fan until that era with Razor Ramon and Shawn Michaels. That was like one of the more memorable, you know, that ladder match, definitely one of the more memorable matches yes, sad that it happened. The scene with the whole segment with KO and Seth Rollins, and I think this, you know, and this is definitely a me thing because it's you know, I'm sure some people have issues, but I love it. It's the style of character work that I really enjoy with Seth Rollins, you know, in desperation mode, and he has to come up with, you know, this idea, and then, you know, he has this great idea and this big, you know, pomp and circumstance, and he's just plagiarizing KO, and then KO's like so he's living like in fancy la la land, like this is a great idea, and KO's like, no, what are you doing? You know, like he's the realist of the group. I dug it. I really enjoyed the interplay and everything about that.
Yep, fun stuff. What else up here?
I was thinking about where Rollins goes from here, and do you think maybe he ends up, because since Almost is also looking for an opponent, he just picks a fight with him, and he's like, oh, I'm going to go ahead and play the Giant?
I guess. I mean, they could. What hadn't crossed my mind, because it feels just random, but it's sort of last two men standing in a way. Robert, what do you think of that? Would fans cheer Seth? Would that be a means to a babyface turn for Seth? They can sing his song and be into his kind of, you know, corny over the top character, or is it just a bad fit and a bad idea? And shame on you, Javier, for putting that in the universe.
Yeah, I think I'll go with the latter on that one. no, because like I think to do that, you would have to kind of heat up Almost as a babyface and make Rollins more of a Shawn Michaels type, where you gotta build that up for weeks and weeks that he's finally gonna get his hands on this little guy. The only devil's advocate you could see of it is someone like Vince going, you know, who's gonna make the Giant look really, really good. And obviously someone like Seth can do it. But I think that's a pretty unlikely scenario, other than the fact that, as you mentioned, Wade, of we're getting there. We're 2 weeks in, and there's just not a lot on the roster that you could reasonably see Seth going up against, why, you know, kind of leaves open that might has to come from outside of the roster. But we've sort of explored that possibility with both guys now, and then I guess by process of elimination, they go against each other.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, Javier.
My other option for Almost, I actually have two for Almost and not, and only one for Seth.
Yep.
Sorry, Seth. My other thing for Almost was a confrontation with The Undertaker. Like, he stops the show and says, you know, nobody can take me, and then they just use that as an excuse to trot out The Undertaker. Not for a match or anything, you know, just like maybe, you know, hits him and that's it.
Robert.
Yeah, if we're working the percentages here, I think that one would be much more likely. It's hard to see. I know they're doing Hall of Fame, but there's going to be some Undertaker presence, you would assume, on the show, and kind of a guaranteed pop, right, if he comes out there and does a choke slam in Texas. So I would say that's much higher than the dream match with Almost and Rollins that you're proposing here, Javier.
Are you in favor of that scenario, or is it just you kind of saying maybe?
Well, I was just spitballing, thinking of the ideas of what to do, and I could see that happening just because since they're inducting the Undertaker this year and get one last, you know, walk down the aisle, that could be in a way to do it. It could even be Seth Rollins instead of Almost. That could be what Seth Rollins does. He doesn't actually have a match, and then he just comes out there and starts whining and complaining, and then the Undertaker comes out and tombstones him.
Yeah, I don't even know if they want Undertaker doing that at this point. You know, like just physically. You know, I'm not sure he's ready for that.
That's also a little too on the nose of what they did with Undertaker like 3 years ago too. Literally, where the guy didn't have a WrestleMania match. You know, that might just be a little too lockstep with that. I don't know though. You're convincing me more and more here. You're getting closer and closer. Maybe if you come up with every wrestler that exists that's not on the card, we'll eventually find the right pairing.
You're right, Robert. It's not like the WWE ever copy and paste their storylines.
Yeah.
The
good point.
One thing you mentioned, Robert, which sparked an idea, because you had mentioned that you were surprised that Cody got over as he did in the Indies. I wonder if that actually has anything to do with what Drew McIntyre did beforehand, because around the time I got into the Indies, and had Cody just shown up, I'd be like, whatever. But I had already followed Drew McIntyre as the WWE prototype guy, and saw how he reinvented himself in the Indies. So then when Cody came around in the Indies, and he kind of almost had the same, I have a list of people I want to wrestle, and this is the stuff I want to do, kind of had sort of the same philosophy. I gave him a more of a chance than I would have otherwise. So it almost felt like, Drew McIntyre was the one who paved that road for, wrestlers who left the WWE and reinvented themselves.
It could be, but I think I'm not discounting that. I thought of it as maybe more of, you got to remember the context of when that was happening. It was a year after Dusty passed away. There was, a genuine, but I think some affection for Cody stuck in the Stardust gimmick. They've been following him on social media, where he's been sort of vocal about his complaints. And then he made his complaints about the company very vocal. And at the time, there wasn't an alternative company. So that was something that seemed like it took a lot of guts to speak out against the specific people the way he did. So that's what I've kind of always attributed that to. I don't know there was necessarily a connection there, because from my perspective, I think we could have viewed Drew as a missed opportunity that they had in 3MB, which I don't know if Cody was viewed as much at that time, at least, as a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's a good take on that. Javier, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, it was just it's not like it was like a step by step comparison, just like a lubing to show that it is possible for you to be able to reinvent yourself on that level. Because Drew McIntyre really is the first person I remember really doing that. And I wonder if, would he have toughed it out and just, swallowed his pride and stuck around the WWE if it didn't feel like the Indies were a legitimate option. Because keep in mind, this is also around the time I got back into wrestling. And then I remember when I was watching beforehand, there was no indies to speak of, because, you didn't have, the ability, to watch as much, I was watching, Cody and McIntyre, in British wrestling, which, would have been much harder, back when I was originally watching wrestling to watch. So, it felt like, they struck around the same time. So that was kind of my thing. And, being part of Bullet Club also didn't help hurt any matter.
I think just that Drew saying from the beginning he wanted to get back to WWE and prove himself outside of WWE, whereas Cody left and it was like, hey, there's all these great things to do and I'm going to branch out on my own and be a true independent contractor and launch a competitor and all this. Like, there are some differences that I wonder how Vince McMahon will look at that, and then how much of that he's aware of and how much of that resonates with him, or if it just comes down to, like you said with Pat McAfee, what do the fans want? And I'm going to give it to him regardless of, how I personally feel about it. And a lot of this has to do with crowd response. I think that's Vince oversimplifying the way he does things, but I think there's also something to it to a certain degree.
And I'm curious what your feel is, Wade, on how much we're going to get from between Austin and KO. Because, do you think we might actually even get a bell ring? They do the show and then they just do we'll have a match and then it's just a, Stone Cold doing his three things, the mud stomp and they're just not calling it a match because Austin's not comfortable calling a match when it's not going to be really a match, but you still get the bell ringing and a pin.
I don't think we're going to get a bell ringing. I think if we're going to get a bell ringing, they would be advertising it as a match. I don't think Austin wants it to be a match. He didn't want to come back and have a match that paled in comparison to what he did when he was a full-time wrestler. And I don't think that's changed. I think if it did change, we would be seeing this advertised as an actual match. So I think it's going to be pretty limited. I think there'll be some good verbal jabs, and KO will get in a little bit of offense, but not enough where Austin's like, you know, doing flat back bumps like he used to do back in the day. And yeah, and then we get a few signature moves and a beer celebration. Robert, how about you? What do you imagine? What do you envision?
Yeah, I don't think they would ring the bell either, because like if you're going to do that, you're not going to just not advertise a Steve Austin match. I don't care how much you want to make the event seem like a special thing. Like that's just not something you would do. You would explicitly advertise it as a match. I think that they are going to find a way to create a little bit of apparel for Austin to be in this scenario. This is one of the few times that we talked about this on my show earlier in this week where they've actually booked Austin for a conflict when he's not just like mediating a conflict, how it tended to be in his post career run. Usually he's kind of in a guest referee or a general manager type of role. The other one being the Piper's Pit segment. This is him being booked for physicality. And it's explicitly advertised as a piece of physicality. And I know, I think in that arena, you could just have Austin come out there, stunner, stump the mud hole, and everyone will go nuts. I get the feeling they probably want to add a little bit to it because they're going so hard. They're so hard with it. Again, I'm not going to be surprised though if that's all they do. But I think that we'll add a little bit to it. But as you said, Wade, like I don't expect him to be taking the power bomb or anything at this stage.
No. Javier, did you answer your own question as you were asking it, or what do you think?
Well, no, because that was like, because I'm thinking that he wouldn't want to advertise a match, you know, so people don't go into it thinking that he's going to have a full-blown match. But they, you know, they could also, you know, kind of like eat their cake and have it too, where they don't advertise the match, you know, to keep him happy, but then you have just like a quick, they get into an argument, they ring, you know, they ring the bell, KO punches him in the corner a few times, goes to do the cannonball, which just, you know, which often intercepts like the Fez press, you know, then it just beats him up, mud hole, stunner, pin him, 1, 2, 3, and that's it, like a, you know, little like 2 minute, 3 minute thing, which, you know, you wouldn't, I you know, because from what I could glean from off, you know, Steve Austin is, you know, that he wouldn't want like a 2-3 minute thing to be advertised as an actual match. But then like post it, you go, oh, you know, we got to see Austin's last match. And it was just, you know, the little thing. So.
Yeah. Yep. Sounds good. What else have you?
That's pretty much it. I'm trying not to start asking questions about Impact because I was watching Impact in between commercial breaks. I'm finally attempting to catch up. I got like 40, I'm 10 episodes down. I still have like 30 left to go. So, that's pretty much it for, yeah. And you know what? It's just weird because like whenever I binge watch Impact, I'm like, man, I really like Impact. I don't know why I fall behind it so often.
Cool. Well, Javier, good to hear from you. Glad you're catching up on Impact and enjoying it.
Yeah, and Robert, good talking to you. I mean, I swear I wasn't ducking you either, because it feels like I haven't talked to you in like forever.
Oh, I took the hint, Javier. I noticed that.
DMing me for months, Javier. What's up with Javier?
Zach's telling me to shut up. It's been out of control. Yeah.
Have you been? You've mainly been on with Zach lately, right?
Yeah, I've only been on once since November, so it's been more than scheduling issues. I expected you to make a little bit of an effort.
Well, because if you were on with Zach, Zach was definitely the one I was avoiding. So.
Okay, and I literally just got a DM from Zach like about 30 seconds ago. I'm gonna tell him that.
All right. Thanks, Javier. It's been fun.
Have a good night.
Yep, take care. All right. Let's go to the mailbag. And we'll begin with Charlie C., who said, I thought Edge had a good night tonight and saw the potential of this new gimmick. Hard to predict too far ahead in WWE, but I could see Edge winning the WWE Championship throughout the summer with a babyface Cody challenging and winning the championship later in the year. Even without Cody showing up tonight, I agree with comments on the Torch as of late that the show has gotten better. The roster is deep, and I think the majority of featured talent are doing good work with what they are given. Go VIP. So that is one perspective on where things could go with Edge and with Cody. Robert, do you think it's a given Cody comes in as a babyface? Is there a chance that Cody, who left AEW in part over being discontent with crowd reaction to him and perhaps Tony getting to the end of the rope in terms of wanting to keep putting him out there and sort of embarrassing the company a little bit, that their one of their lead babyfaces and co-founders was being booed, actually being a heel in WWE, could that happen? Would this be seen as a different circumstance that Cody would agree to?
I think there's a possibility. For one, I mean, even though, as you mentioned earlier, that it's a big coup for Vince, it's probably like watched 30 seconds of AEW over the last couple of years, you know, to actually know what's going on. So he could just declare that that's going to be the case. And this company likes to fight against headwinds all the time. So even yeah. if he's getting cheered, I mean, they made Becky Lynch a heel at SummerSlam. They made Bryan Danielson a heel at some point in a really weird circumstance. So I wouldn't put it past him. I think though, they probably want to, if there's going to be a pop, they probably want to lean into that pop a little bit. With that said, like going forward, when we're talking like SummerSlam time, I do think Cody's role in a WWE setting specifically would be as a heel. And I think that is more of a natural fit for him in general. But right off the bat, I think you almost got to let the fans turn on him. Even though that's not generally not a good strategy to have the baby face, you know, that the people get sick of. We've had probably too much of that over the years. But I think he's definitely going to be babyface out of the gate, but don't ever doubt Vince in these situations.
As far as his other comment about the depth of Raw and the talent being used well, it's nice to see Finn Balor getting a push again. Damian Priest probably correctly cast now as a heel. It feels fresher. I don't think he's a red hot heel, but it's fresher than when he's kind of spinning his wheels as a babyface who just didn't quite gain traction. Omos is, you know, part of Vince McMahon's sort of, you know, circus sideshow where they, you know, there's some trait that somebody has that gets emphasized, and Aziz was fine getting fed to him. You know, Zelina and Carmella as a heel tag team are fine. Liv Morgan and Rhea Ripley is fine. They're talented. They're worth utilizing, but obviously they're not top tier people. KO and Seth are getting utilized well. Ray and Dominic Dominic has breathed new life into Ray in a way in terms of using him in a different way with a father-son dynamic. Shelton and Cedric are good workers, and they're getting a chance to, you know, play a valuable role. You know, there is a role for wrestlers who will give you a good match, can win now and then, but generally are there to put someone else over. Edge is a star. It still feels fresh seeing him, even if I'm not a fan of how they got to the stage of his character. Doudrop is doing jobs, but she's also being portrayed as credible. The matches against top stars are competitive. And then Orton and Riddle are fun. Gable and Otis I missed this week. We didn't get enough of them. I thought the in-ring promo with Montez Ford especially did, but he and Angelo Dawkins was a different version of them that I liked. And I'm intrigued by the interaction between the Street Profits and RK-Bro. So, I mean, you know, you run down who was on this show and other little things. Jimmy Smith's gotten better. Corey Graves is you know, kind of the Elfie of the NL crew, the experienced guy, and he holds things together. Byron is good. I mean, Byron's good playing the role he plays, you know, as the third guy. It is, it's not, it's just, I don't think it's a bad show. It's not for everyone. You know, some people want something different from pro wrestling, but I can understand wrestlers who are part of the show and the writers writing it having pride in putting out a product right now that's utilizing the talent well within the parameters of how WWE presents sports entertainment. And, you know, some of the things that they overdo in terms of language and and the formatting and how long wrestlers stand in the ring between ring entrance and the bell ringing. I mean, if you get hung up on that and preoccupied with it, and I get it, then that's going to kind of override some other things. But Robert, I mean, I think it's a better version of Raw than we've seen in a while, and I think the 3 hours goes by faster and smoother for me now than it has in quite a while.
I didn't think this week's Raw was particularly good. I also didn't think it was particularly bad. I just kind of thought it was a running in place, specifically for the season that it's like. I don't know, and I'm sure there's corrections. Like, I don't know if this Raw never happened in the context of the whole build to WrestleMania that anything actually plays out that much differently. I felt like it was that type of Raw. With that said, the last 2 weeks of Raw I felt were very good, and
yeah,
it might even extend past that. I just thought like they just seem focused. They seem tighter, and it kind of speaks to a little bit of what you're saying. And I don't know if that's roster depth. It might actually be the opposite of roster depth in that, like, because just they borrow a phrase from politics or economics, they kind of have gutted their middle class, so to speak. So everybody that is left is at least a featured performer in some way. Maybe not a main eventer, but they have something to do. There's a bit of a focus. We've had less 24/7 segments, it's felt like, and there's been a little less frivolity on the show. There has still been silly segments, but segments that matter to something. And I think it has been a little bit of a tighter show. Now, of course, the overall blanket bullet point thing that's always going to be is just you can't have a tight 3 hour wrestling television show. I think that's just an impossible paradigm to work within. But yeah, in general, I felt like Raw has been pretty good. And well, I don't, as I mentioned earlier, I feel like there's not a lot of that gravitas to the WrestleMania build and all that. I do feel that they are focused. They do have their eyes on certain prizes and possibly even a little less reliant on just the names of the past. I say that with full knowledge of what one half of the biggest thing they're building is a guy that hasn't wrestled in 20 years. But I think it's a little bit less about the Undertakers, the Batistas, and Rocks coming in this year than it generally has been.
Yeah, absolutely. The word you might have been looking for when you said that there's no such thing as a what was it? Not a tight 3 hour Raw. What was the phrase used?
I thought I said tight, but
maybe okay. We'll go with that then. Oxymoron. It's an oxymoron. There's no, you can't.
Yes.
A tight 3 hour wrestling show. Not a thing. Inherently contradictory. Okay. Let's go to Joby. He said, Wade, as requested from the flagship of Jason Powell, I gave up watching Raw a while back. That wasn't what we suggested you do, but he did do this, which we suggested. Give it an open-minded try tonight, as it was in my hometown of Jacksonville, and I was curious as to if we would see Cody. My verdict was it's an okay 45-minute show spread out over 3 hours. Nice transition. How's that, Robert? Which is why I just can't make it regular viewing on a work night. I'd forgotten just how much filler there is. You got maybe 70 minutes commercial breaks or promo packages for things like Raw or SmackDown. And that's true, by the way. There's 22 minutes commercials in any hour of broadcast or cable programming. About 22 minutes. It varies a little bit by network and by show. And, you know, a lot less in NHL games, for example, but a lot more in football games at times. But anyway, but a regular show like this, about 22 minutes per hour, so you're up to 66 minutes over 3 hours, and then you got more than four minutes of video packages, so 70 minutes is conservative. Anyway, back to JB. He says, then you have nonstop recap the things that happened as recently as 5 minutes ago, which doesn't even make sense as the show loses viewers hour over hour. By the way, someone put up a clip of Kevin Owens tonight standing in the ring during a commercial going, why are they re-airing that? That just happened. totally Kevin Owens.
His face turned happening in real time there.
And it's funny, I'll pause the reading the email. Like, I am not against reinforcing things that just happened. I think AEW would benefit from that. I think there is something about repetition driving home what happened. I think there's something to be said for taking a deep breath in a show and saying, something happened, now let's reflect on it. And especially if it's, you know, an hour or hour and a half, 2 hours apart from it happening versus recapping it, there's a lot of people who didn't watch at the beginning who are watching later. You know, there's a lot of replacement of viewers, even if the number stays somewhat similar. A lot of people are being replaced by others. So I'm not against it, but you have to be judicious about it. You can't overdo it and not turn off people who are paying close attention, but I like the idea of really emphasizing, underlining, stressing something that happened and giving people a chance to reflect on it. We don't do enough of that in our lives, in society, pausing to reflect, and I'll take a little bit of that in my three-hour wrestling show, but that mini editorial side. So come 10:30, they did a five-minute recap package on Kevin Owens and Rollins. Before the main event, they did a recap of a Doudrop match from an hour before, of all things. The rest of the show was the wrestling equivalent of a filibuster as they stretched the Rollins and the RKO forever. The RKO stuff in particular, with the talking segment into a tag, into a singles match over like 50 minutes just to fill time. It's become the opposite of Crash TV. Ultimately, I feel like WWE either has little respect for my time or thinks I'm too dumb to remember what happened before the last commercial break. Additionally, Raw is the most antithetical name for a show on television. That is true. Everything is so polished. LED screens in every inch of the building. 180 minutes of buzzwords like stupendous beating you over the head with like a club. The formula is so set after years, there's no spontaneity. Two grown men acting like buffoons arguing over who gets to host the talk show as the featured program. It's so far removed from even a few years ago. I did like Edge quite a bit, enjoyed Omos, Aziz, and it was somehow new at least, and I enjoyed RK-Bro if they were contained in one segment. So it was an interesting experiment, but ultimately too little return on my invested time. RIP Scott Hall, and go VIP and listen to the awesome long-form interviews in the vault. Thanks, JV. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Robert, I mean, that was an experiment. Somebody who tuned out Raw, tuned back in. We've been touting it. As you might point out, this wasn't the best week to come back compared to other weeks recently. But that isn't I don't think WWE should ignore people who feel the way JB do. And I think it's worth considering cutting back on the recap packages, having more original content, shortening things up, having a few things that move at a little bit faster clip, a little bit faster pace, and especially saving the most important to last, a greater sense of spontaneity and a little less polish. WWE has what they do down, and it's smooth and it's practiced, but boy, it is an inaccurate name for a show after all these years. Anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I would say tonight too, like on the Owens Rollins match, it was a pretty good match. But from when the coming up next graphic aired to when the match actually started was a really long time. I thought it was gonna be like an epic match, you know, based on how much time it seemed like they were gonna be given. And I'm kind of two minds with that, because I think it goes back to my earlier point of having that 3-hour show. It is, we are in a different world of attention spans, and our attention gets diverted all the time. And I was thinking about this as you were talking. I generally enjoy Raw the least on the nights I come on this show. And I think it's because I try to watch it, in a completely linear format, where on other nights, you know, I'm flipping, I'm watching basketball, I'm going outside and doing some stuff and then coming back in. And I do get some benefits out of the video packages. I think it's, I wouldn't completely discount them, but it's hard though, because as I said, kind of contradicting my point by the world we are in and the distractions that we are always in. I think wrestling fans though are completists in their viewing, and you know they watch first run live television a lot. They do that, and that's what's kind of unique about that demographic. I really don't know what WWE can do other than tightening up the stuff maybe that isn't the video recaps. That way repetition doesn't build upon repetition. It's generally the plugs that I have more of a problem with than the recaps. And I feel like there's been less of the plugs lately. Either that or yeah. I may have tuned them out. I'm not sure which happened.
I think they have less going on that they're plugging. I mean, there was a few years ago that show where, I mean, they were promoting like seven things all at once: reality series, the Saudi Arabia show, a pay-per-view, a NXT special. It was just like, I mean, it was just overwhelming. I mean, and they're not, they just don't have as much that they're doing all at once right now.
The network, everything. Yeah. And the charities and like you always say, it kind of became a corporate, like a boardroom presentation. And that to me is a little more numbing than, you know, catching someone at the top of the second hour and catching them up on what was happening. Someone that might have just been tuning in, you know, getting off of work or whatever. So I don't enjoy the recaps either if I'm watching like I watched tonight, but they do serve some purpose. I do believe.
And I mean, most of us, I am not going out on a limb in saying this, have a phone in our hand and a kitchen nearby to grab a snack. I mean, you know, in a way, it's a less exhausting endeavor to pay attention for three straight hours. If you can watch a recap, but if not, you know, you can check out Instagram or Twitter or the latest headlines on your local paper that you subscribe to on your phone, or pwtorch.com to catch up on a hits and misses column or a news update. I mean, there's so much for us to do. I'd be surprised if there were a ton of people sitting around with a remote in their hand going, if I'm bored for 3 minutes on Raw, I'm flipping the channel. It's like, if you're bored watching a show, the 2022 reaction is to unlock your phone and check on it. Like, so I'm sure they, you know, have put thought into this, but I think it's something worth reevaluating, the quantity and the ratio and keeping track of things. But I go back to saying, I think AEW would benefit from slowing down a little bit and having more things that reflect back on or recap what happened leading into things. I think it would help discipline their booking and help reinforce things for an audience that I think can sometimes feel overwhelmed or feel that that the show is playing to people who watch everything and memorize everything and think about it all week until the next week comes. And most viewers, I don't think, are like that. And a little reminder and getting emotionally wrapped up for what's coming next live, it's a good thing. It takes away from the live experience when you're in the building, but, you know, ultimately fans in buildings, you know, have to understand when they go to a TV event, there's going to be some things that play to the TV audience. All right. Brad Tipton in Asheville, North Carolina says, hey, Wade, in watching women's matches for the past several years or so, I've noticed the constant overuse of forearms to the neck and chest area. You can almost guarantee a spot in every women's match where forearms are exchanged, and I just don't get it. They look weak and sloppy. Just tonight, Bianca used them 4 to 5 times in a row on Dewdrop, and coincidentally, these same forearm shots are exactly what injured Becky Lynch at a live show just a week or so ago. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I was under the impression that the ability to throw a working punch is rather important in the concept of pro wrestling. Just wanting your take, and if you've noticed this as well, thanks for all your work you do and the hours of content you provide each week. Take care. Thanks, Brad. Good to hear from you. Robert, I notice forearms in women's matches. I'm not anti-forearm. I'm anti any move that doesn't look good or a move that's overdone or a move that's dangerous. Punches to the head feel, I wouldn't mind, you know, watching a wrestling show where no punches were thrown, just as an experiment to see what wrestlers would do if they weren't throwing punches. But if the answer to that is then just an over-reliance on forearms, that can be a negative too. I don't see it as a huge issue, but how about you? Is that something that you've noticed?
No, I haven't really, given it a lot of thought. To your other point, I mean, Jim Ross has been on that kick for forever that we shouldn't have punches in pro wrestling. And his logic, I think it's fairly sound, you know, as an MMA guy, when a punch connects, that's usually the end of the fight. It's usually what most of these things are building. So if guys are just punching each other the whole time, it kind of doesn't work. I do wonder, and this is just me thinking, you know, we've heard years ago, and you would probably know more about this, Wade, how remember they didn't want the women punching back in the Diva era. I wonder if there's something still to that, or if that's discouraged, or if it's just due to biology, they do not want to do chops, maybe. I mean, I could see that being a thing too.
Yeah. Yeah, anatomy. I think women have different societal norm rules. And
you got the scientific discipline right. Good job.
Yeah, yes, oxymoron and anatomy. I'm proud. Women deal with different things than guys do in terms of some of the physics and expectations in their matches. And if you know, I mean, there are corrections. You know, the corrections are made. You know, except for distraction finishes. Although I'll even give WWE credit for this. They are doing a ton of distractions in matches, like as much as ever. I don't think more than ever, but as much now than 3 months ago and 6 months ago. But they're not all leading to finishes. And that was my happy middle ground compromise that I pitched. Is if you're going to do distractions, don't always have the distraction be the finish. Have 40% be the finish, but have 60% just be a spot in the match that the babyface overcomes. And then it doesn't become as predictable, and it's not as it doesn't undercut the drama of the match as much and feel like as much of a cop-out. It just feels like something that gets put in matches. Heels are trying to cheat, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And so I say that as I think they corrected course a little bit on that, and maybe they will on, you know, some things that the women are doing maybe too much of in the ring. All right, up next, JB from Detroit said, would you rather have seen a Riddle versus Orton match or RK-Bro versus Street Profits match at Mania? I asked the question because I'm not really sure a regurgitated tag title rematch feels anywhere close to important enough of a match for either Riddle or Orton at this point. I get that the team is popular and it's possible they don't want to break them up yet and possibly squeeze more juice and ride it to SummerSlam, but I can't help but feel as if they've had enough time to create an interesting enough story to make Riddle versus Orton a top three match time carry one of the nights of Mania, which seems to be lacking a little bit of depth. So to this point, now it appears Coney won't be appearing on the card. As always, love the show, go VIP. So I'm not making any conclusions about Cody. I appreciate the mystery that's out there and that, you know, word isn't leaking definitively either way, or if it is that people are not, you know, doing what I call show-off reporting just to show I know something is going to happen and then revealing it ahead of time to get a scoop or clicks or whatever. It's just, it's fun not knowing when Cody's showing up or if he's showing up. And part of that is I think, a deliberate information campaign. So that said, I think it is, I'm more intrigued with Street Profits against RK-Bro, against presumably Otis and Gable. I like that better than prematurely breaking up Riddle and Orton, turning one of them and having a match when people are really enjoying RK-Bro. 10 years ago on one of the flashback podcasts, I was talking about, and I think it was with Andrew Goldstein. We just ran that two-part interview. I recommend people check that out on our Blue Logo Show. Search Wade Keller and subscribe to the Blue Logo Show if you're not, and listen to over 2 hours, maybe two and a half, close to 2.5 hours of ex-creative team member Andrew Goldstein. It was fascinating backstage stories and insights. And I went on a little mini rant about, you know, that the tag team division should be a place for singles wrestlers who don't have a top-level feud to participate in, and but you have to make the tag belts feel important enough that it doesn't feel like a step down. And long story short, I think they've done that with Riddle and Orton. I don't think anyone's thinking, why are they in the tag division? It's not worth it. And I think having an established team like Street Profits, who are not singles wrestlers, with two teams that are consist of singles wrestlers who have teamed up in Gable and Otis and Orton and Riddle, is fresh. It's good. I was intrigued and enjoyed seeing the Street Profits in a different setting with a different edge to their promo. That feels fresher to me and better than rushing into a breakup with Orton and Riddle. That'll feel like it was more of a calendar angle than one that was ripe to be, you know, I'm going to mix metaphors, but ripe for the trigger to be pulled. Robert, what do you think?
Well, first of all, the aggregators are going to have to get their pens out. I think you just endorsed a triple threat match, so that is big news here on this show. So I think Orton and Riddle is probably a bigger match than whatever you can get from the tag team division. But like you're saying, there might be some equity in investing into the tag team division. And just because it's a bigger match doesn't necessarily mean it would be a better match. I think if we've seen anything, Randy Orton singles matches at WrestleMania tend not to be very good. And I think this can be the exception. And it goes back to our earlier point that if especially if there's not a need to break up the team, don't just do it, as you said, for the calendar. And I don't get the sense outside of, giving a bunch of money to Austin, which I kind of think they probably would want to do that at any point. I don't get the sense that they are feeling desperation with this WrestleMania necessarily in that way, where it's like, okay, we got to do this. We got to do all of this. Maybe that's why the build is feeling a little underwhelming to some, because they're not acting as desperate as they could. They're not even, for having two nights, it doesn't even feel like they're doing the whole let's get everybody on the card thing quite yet. So I think this is a fine direction to go, although I do agree that is a bigger match than what could be happening what will be happening in the tag division.
Yep. All right, let's wrap up with an email from Zach in Texas. Gentlemen, I'd be remiss if I didn't start this email by sending my condolences to Scott Hall's family and the rest of the clique. Few people were as effortlessly cool as Scott Hall. He had so many iconic moments, whether it be making the 1-2-3 Kid, the ladder match with Shawn Michaels, or showing up on Nitro and turning the wrestling world upside down. Let's not forget he also suggested Sting start wearing crow makeup. Wrestling in the 90s and beyond wouldn't be the same without the bad guy. Thank God for DDP helping Scott Hall finally conquer his demons and allow him to live the last decade or so, getting the adulation and flowers he so richly deserved. Maybe strive to ooze even half as much machismo as he did. Well stated, Zach, a good pithy synopsis, giving Scott Hall credit for that, which he deserves credit for. He also says, as far as tonight's show goes, I'm going to go out on a limb right now at 8:26 Central Time and say Cody isn't showing up. There's been zero indication that he's even signed a contract, and every indication he's had second thoughts. Perhaps DK's acquisition of Ring of Honor was enough to open the door to talks of Cody possibly returning and being ROH champion. It's certainly better than whatever creative Vince might offer him. How embarrassing for WWE, though, that they couldn't land one free agent that came their way. So, yeah, I cannot rule out a falling out or someone changing their mind on what at one point was, you know, considered, you know, not a done deal, but the direction everybody was going. I still think this is a bit of a misinformation campaign to add drama. I don't think we would have. I mean, if those Cody chants were piped in, they wouldn't, you know, for sure that's WWE trying to build up Cody for a debut. I think the dashing comment, Robert, you dismissed it earlier. I was very disappointed. I think it wasn't a coincidence. I think it was intentional. I think they are laying the groundwork, or just messing with us, but I think they're laying the groundwork as subtly as they can for Cody to show up. I don't know if it's before or right after Mania. But you know, I can't rule out he's had second thoughts. I don't think Ring of Honor is the thing that would cause Cody to have second thoughts. I can't rule out that Tony's like, Cody, you don't like the EVPs, or, you know, whatever. You like them, but you don't get along with them. There's not chemistry there. Do you just want a little project of your own to go do your thing? You can be the top star there. You can book yourself. You know, I don't know. I mean, you can talk up a scenario that makes some sense. But that's the kind of money that Cody wanted to make to pay for his new mansion that he just moved into and his expensive tastes. He's not Mick Foley. He's not Steve Austin. He's not frugal. The money, WWE's paying good money, and they're going to pay good money for Cody. So I think if, you know, the ROH thing sounds fun if it's not Cody and it's not such a big difference in money and all that. But, I mean, it's fun to talk about and at least explore it as, if nothing else, a thought exercise. It crossed my mind. I brought it up, but I did it as a virtual implausibility. That was fun as a thought exercise, more than something that I would put money down on in any way. Those are my thoughts, Robert. Anything you want to add to any of that?
I know that the Ring of Honor speculation popped up immediately, but I almost feel like a step down for Cody in some ways. Seems like you said, like he's if anything else, he's ambitious, maybe to a fault, but he is ambitious. I think landing a really big contract with the company that had no use for him a couple of years ago would probably be something an ambition that he would want to fulfill. I will say this, though. I dismissed your dashing comment, and I'm searching around. Apparently, the word nightmare was plugged into that sentence as well.
Ooh.
So, yeah, now the needle is tipping. I can't get a direct quote, but it looks like you weren't you didn't quite have the tinfoil hat on there. So, credit.
And again, I replayed it, and it felt like, and I feel bad that I missed Nightmare because I even replayed it, unless it wasn't in that exact moment. But it did feel like Graves was arranging his words consciously so he could end with dashed tonight. His WrestleMania dreams were dashed tonight. And I was like, okay, maybe Corey's just going into business for himself and going to play dumb. You know, I mean, there's a whole range of possibilities, but I think they're dropping Easter eggs and breadcrumbs, leading to what was always the plan, along with a little bit of a misinformation campaign, which I am all in favor of. That's my interpretation of what's happening. But anyway, yeah. Anything else, Robert?
Well, I mean, just as thick as they laid it on too with the Miz stuff a couple weeks ago, like I know negotiations could break down, but I don't think you do that to not deliver on it in any way. So I don't buy it. I'm with you that he's still coming in, and if you haven't heard anything that's leading us in the other direction, I kind of have no reason to doubt it. And again, for no other reason than this, you know, we're booking Seth versus Undertaker or some crazy stuff on the show. he's coming in.
And I this is a wrong phrase. I put my money where my mouth is. I walk the talk. I am not seeking out with people I could ask what's going on with Cody, because I think he's going to land in WWE, and I don't, I'm not quite sure I want that confirmed. And if it were confirmed by accident, I don't know that I'd want to pass it along here. Like, I just think there comes a point where you're close enough to something happening and it's a specific thing that is going to happen, that leaving that as a mystery is better than giving away what's going to happen in the season finale of a TV series that you're 3 years invested in because a script leaks or somebody heard from an actor what's going to happen. Like, I just think that's where wrestling is. And so I'm not the people who I was seeking out a lot of information on Cody on a few weeks ago. I am not hounding, or even when I'm talking to them, asking about it for that reason. To me, it's more fun for everyone to speculate, but also sit back and let whatever's going to happen play out. And then when it happens or doesn't happen, then we'll delve into what happened, how did that play out that way, especially if he ends up not arriving, then I'll certainly dig and search and try to get as much information as I can on it. Robert, anything else from Raw that we did not bring up that we want to talk about before we go here?
I think we covered everything that was at least meaningful enough on this show.
Yep, I agree. Real quick thought on Damian Priest and just how he's doing his heel. We haven't talked since then. Is he just losing ground overall, or did the heel turn help make him more relevant, or was it a mistake because he was just gaining traction as a face? Where are you on him?
Yeah, and I like him overall as a performer. I think the heel turn's been a little too cheesy. And then I think happening the same night as the Edge heel turn, with it being kind of the same basic parameters, has sort of hurt things. And I also feel switching the secondary titles on both shows so close to each other also has kind of hurt hurt the juice of that on both programs.
Yep. All right, very good. Thanks, Robert. How can people follow you on Twitter?
Go ahead and find me on Twitter. Just type in my name, Robert Vallejos, at Rob M. Vallejos, RobMVallejos.
Very good. And tell people about your weekly PW Torch Daily Cast.
Sure. So every Monday evening, you can get MMA talk for pro wrestling fans as part of the Daily Cast lineup. It's myself and Rick Monsey on most weeks, breaking down the news and the cards going on, mostly in the UFC, but all of MMA. And our distinction on our show is we try to do it as an MMA show that kind of sort of sounds and has the rhythm of a show like this, where we're breaking down the aesthetics, we're breaking down the money under the line, the ratings, all that stuff that wrestling fans seem to care about. We sort of apply that lens to mixed martial arts, along with certain talks of technique and the ins and outs of things. But we like to take more, I'd say, of a macro take on MMA and kind of view an MMA really more as an entertainment product than a sports product. And we also mix in a healthy dose of wrestling talk. MMA has been a little quiet as far as what's been going on the cards lately. So the wrestling talk and everything going on in wrestling has kicked up. So it's been a little more, I wouldn't say wrestling has been the majority of what we're talking about, but it's been more of an even split lately. And that tends to happen going into WrestleMania season, and especially this year when we have the two title matches have former UFC champions in them, so that's kind of some red meat for us to deal with. And of course, in AEW have a dog collar match with another MMA legend in on that side of things, so enough pro wrestling talk, but probably the least amount of pro wrestling talk of anything else that happens on the Torch.
Yes, there's a good way to put it. All right, thanks, Robert. It was great catching up with you.
Thanks, as always.
Thanks to our callers, our listeners, our emailers, Javier, everyone else. Thank you. We'll talk to you next time.